Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
This is KKFN and KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. All right, let's get to Question Mark, which is brought to us by Brakes Plus. And this came in earlier in the show, and I held on to it because it was a good one. Proof that Question Mark can come up at any point during the course of the show. So please send those in on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. But this goes back to the idea that the Broncos did not come out ready to go on Friday.
Okay.
And is it an issue? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Question is, Mark, are the 49ers filled with self-starters, or do they have a more intense coaching culture? Let's not let Fangio's staff off the hook here.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there comes a time when you don't match the intensity of the opponent. Like that happens, Mike. That'll happen on Sundays. There's times you walk into a buzzsaw, and I get that. It's how do you compete out of that? When you have been outmatched, how do all of a sudden you say, okay, time to flip the switch and start competing? Like that to me is a big part of this game. Because there will be, you know, there's an ebb and flow in every game, and there's times when you have a ton of momentum and you're rolling, and then there's times where you just don't. And you've got to manufacture that. And the fact that you couldn't manufacture it, I will always look at things as the player's responsibility. You know, I've always looked at this is our team. You know, I used to say that all the time. It's our team. Mike Shanahan's not going to make one block, one tackle. You know, he's not covering a kickoff. Right? Greg Robinson isn't doing it. Alex Gibbs isn't going to block one dude. You know, Alex Gibbs, we had conversations on the sideline before where he's cussing me out about something that he thought happened that didn't happen. And I'm, you know, giving it right back to him. Where eventually I just took my helmet and jammed him in the chest, tried to break his sternum, and said, if you think you can block somebody, go out there, be my guest. Go out there, knock him out, big guy. Then he told me to, you know, F off, and then he walked away, right? But the bottom line is, at some point, you're the player. It's your team. You're the one that's got to go out there and produce. The coaches aren't going to make a play. And, like, Vic Fangio has done a really nice job. I think Vic Fangio is going to be a heck of a head coach. I really do. But the bottom line is, as players, you have got to be able to get it going. And if you can't get it going, that's not, I'm not going to blame the coaches. Like, I mean, that text, and I'm not busting on the texter, but that's just typical of the society we have, right? We're all victims. Nothing is our fault. Oh, woe is me. Oh, no. Why, you know, nothing ever works out for me. No, at some point, you got to strap it up, man. You got to buckle your bucket, and you got to go out there and make a play. And the coaches can't do that. The players have to do that.
Jake in Castle Rock says, guys, I like your thought on an 8-8 can look good, but my concern is the turnover of a roster year to year can raise all the same problems and questions next year. Mm. I disagree with that. If you go 8-8, I think 8-8 could and would look encouraging enough that you would feel good about the young players that you've drafted over the last couple of years forming the real nucleus of your next great team. I think you'd come away feeling like Joe Flacco still has a lot left in the tank, and you're in no hurry to hand the reins over to Drew Lock. And I think 8-8 could look and be encouraging enough to say, hey, Von Miller is still very much a part of our future.
Right.
Emmanuel Sanders is still very much a part of our future. And maybe even there be a way to bridge whatever gap is there with Chris Harris Jr. as well.
I think what the texter's missing here is there is purging your roster because you're not good. And then there is fine-tuning your roster and purging the players that aren't good. Do you know what I mean? Like you look at that difference between the 95 team and the 96 team, we got rid of several players that were past their prime, that no longer were performing at a high enough level. We went out and found ourselves a third wide receiver. You know, we purged our roster, but we didn't purge it because we weren't good. We purged the parts that needed to be replaced. So like every roster turns over in the NFL about 20-30%.
Yep.
Every single roster does, every single year. But if you could establish at 8-8 what your core players are, because we haven't established core players, right? Can Garrett Bowles be a core player? That remains to be seen, right? Is Dalton Risner going to be a core player for the rest? Is McGovern? There's still a question out there about McGovern. Can McGovern be a core player for the long term? Juwan James better be a core player. Better figure it out, right? As much money as you spent on him. Like, there's a lot of these things that are going to be answered. Is Will Parks going to be a core player for the long term? Justin Simmons. There's still question marks about all these guys. And so, if we're establishing our core, so our top, if you're talking roster in general, we're talking about our top 30 and the turnovers on the bottom 23 and we're getting better, then that's not purging your roster. That's fine tuning your roster.
You have said in the past that you believe no matter what John Elway is saying publicly, privately, if they went 8-8, that he could feel good about that.
8-8, 9-7, if it's the right 8-8, 9-7, like we're talking about.
Okay,
yes.
So when he says on Saturday, quote, we've got to win football games this year and get it turned around. We'll worry about the future as we go forward, but at this point, we're thinking about now. Do you still feel that a good 8-8 will satisfy what he's talking about here?
Absolutely. If it's a good 8-8 and you've pinpointed the core of your football team going forward, and you're going to build on that, and you're going to, you know, if Deshaun Hamilton isn't the guy, if he can't continuously get separation, if he can't answer the bell, if he struggles with injury issues, if he's not the guy, maybe Tim Patrick establishes himself as the guy. Like, maybe that's the case, right? But, like, you're going to define this roster. If that happens and you're 8-8, you're like, all right, we need to go find ourselves that third wide receiver. It's like when Peyton Manning came here. Emmanuel Sanders wasn't number one. You know what Emmanuel was? He was an addition to be a number three, right? He was going to be the slot guy. That's what we need. Now, he's developed into that kind of legit outside threat guy. But the bottom line is he evolved into that position. When they initially went after him, he was kind of the Steelers' number three. He was a guy that was up and coming. We developed him. You know, we used him in that slot role. He has blossomed into something more than that. But the bottom line is if you go 8-8 and it's a good 8-8 and you know kind of we have got our top 30 players and we're pretty damn good and now we need to get these next 23 in line, then I think you can walk into the postseason going, like I said, in 1995, 8-8, we felt good. We knew we addressed the needs that we had. We saw what we were and what we weren't. We addressed them in the off season, and that was, you know, that was the catalytic event that led us to back-to-back championships.
Texter says you guys pump up the fact that we're supposedly Super Bowl or bust every year to settling for 8-8. So what is it? Let me take it. I do not buy into the idea that this team is Super Bowl or bust. I think it's great that they continue to have a mantra that is we're committed to being Super Bowl champs again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're so naive or blind over there to think that they're actually a Super Bowl contender this year. Okay, I think that they can have a season that falls far short of a Super Bowl and still feel good about it, especially moving forward. I have no false illusions about where this team is at. You go 16-28 over your last 44 games, you're not a Super Bowl contender, okay? You're still hell-bent on getting back to that level,
right?
But you got to understand there are many steps to go to get to that point. Here's why I'd be okay with 8-8, because I am convinced if they went 8-8 against this schedule in this division, we would come away with it convinced that Joe Flacco can be the guy here long term.
Sure, especially if that 8-8, there's a home win against Kansas City, there's a home win against the Chargers. There's some
good road win somewhere.
Yeah, we go to Green Bay and win. You know, I mean, I think you do that, and I think, you know, that's one of those things you can, it's a building block. Like, you're a Super Bowl franchise. Like, that's the standard. Not every year are you going to win the Super Bowl, right? But you're a Super Bowl you're one of the franchises in the NFL that Super Bowl is a legitimate, it's a legitimate fact. You know, they've been to what, eight of the damn games. You know, won what, three? So, like, it's something that has been there. You've done it. Like, it would be like saying, hey, Detroit, we're a Super Bowl contender. No, you guys don't, you have never even sniffed it. You know? You haven't sniffed it. So, like, the Broncos know what it takes. You're not gonna be a legit Super Bowl contender. And Shannon Sharpe brought this point. I was doing TV with Shannon Sharpe on FS1 a month ago or so. And it was when Cleveland came out and said, hey, we're Super Bowl contenders, you know? You know how Cleveland is all about the hype. The hype is real, remember? And Shannon goes, you know, in our back-to-back championship years, we never, winning the Super Bowl was not the goal from the start. We never talked about the Super Bowl. We talked about winning our division, getting a home playoff game. Those were our goals. And if we do that, the rest takes care of itself. Like, those were our two goals, Mike. It wasn't, we didn't walk into the season, and I don't know that the Super Bowl was ever mentioned. You know, we're a Super Bowl organization. We have a history here, but it wasn't the goal. The goal was to win the division and secure a home playoff game, or a bye was really the goal.
Texter. There it is. Way to go, Mark. 8-8. Of course you would accept that, Mark Orange Slices Schlereth.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. I had my Super Bowl rings in my headphones.
Oh, snap.
Orange Slices. Who is that?
No name.
No name. Typical. No name. Hiding.
Oh, that is skim milk.
Dude, you got to be realistic about your team's chances. You got to be a realist about the talent level or the lack thereof. You know, I know we love to blame Vance Joseph. Oh, Vance Joseph stinks. Vance Joseph can't coach. And you know what? There's a big learning curve. There's no question about it. And he didn't do a very good job. Like, I don't have any hesitation in saying that. But it wasn't like he was loaded, you know, from a talent perspective. So I'm just letting you know.
All right, so for the texter says, I can hardly believe what I'm hearing. Happy with 8-8? No freaking way I will ever be happy with that.
Right.
Okay, so then what you're telling me then, that here's how I read that text. I read that text that you believe that what has happened over the last 2+ years was all about the coaching.
Uh-huh.
And that there was nothing wrong with the personnel, and that this is a team that the last couple of years, instead of being 5-11, 6-10, should have been 9-7, 10-6 at minimum.
Right.
Okay, so then what you're telling me, Texter, is I'm going to assume that you're not a hypocrite and that you're consistent in your thoughts. Then if they only go 8-8 this year, which, by the way, would be an improvement over the last couple of years, then your feeling will be Vic Fangio's the wrong guy. Mike Munchak was overrated.
Right.
And you will once again come out and blame the coaching staff, correct? Because,
yeah.
I mean, how else to interpret a text like that? If 8-8 is unacceptable for you, then if they go 8-8, who's to blame? I'll ask the texter, please respond. If 8-8 is unacceptable to you and there's no way you can find a silver lining in 8-8, then tell me who pays
again,
if they go 8-8.
I'm not sure.
Like I said, it's not always, you know, the record isn't always what, you know, isn't always what it says it is, you know. There's difference. There's a difference. Some 8-8 teams are awful. Some 8-8 teams are on their way up, so to speak, you know. So you just never can be. It's got to pass the eyeball test, Mike. And I'm not saying there could be an 8-8 that's just an awful 8-8 where you have games where you don't show up, you have games you don't play well, you have games down the stretch you're not very good, the offense never really improves in the red zone, and then it's time to really look at yourself and say, okay, guys, guess what? You know what? We don't have the players that it takes. Maybe Joe Flacco isn't the guy we thought he was. Maybe he is on the downside. Maybe the back injury and the hip injury have limited him to the point where he's not good enough anymore. And then we have to make wholesale changes. But again, this is why you watch film. This is why you just don't look at somebody's stats and go, oh, that guy's really good because he did this. It's like, you remember when they drafted, what was the guy's name, Mike Crowell? Was it Crowell from Nebraska that had 10 sacks and went to a Pro Bowl?
Yep.
You know, and he fell into 8 sacks. I mean, it's because Fletch was on the other side and Mecklenburg was running the edge and everybody else, and he was getting single blocked and they missed a bunch of assignments and he got 10 sacks. How good a player was he?
Not that good.
He was a very average, below average player, right? But he got 10 sacks one year and he went to the Pro Bowl. Like there's sometimes when the stats just aren't, they're not real. They're hollow stats, Mike. And just because there are stats there, just because it's an 8-8, it doesn't mean it's a hollow 8-8. There could be some really good things going on with that 8-8. And I pointed it out, the 8-8 season we had in 1995 was the kind of catalytic event that said to us, hey man, we're a pretty damn good team. Like, we got a chance to be really good. We just have a few things that we have to address from a personnel standpoint. Mike Shanahan got it done, and the next thing you know, we're a juggernaut. I think we still have the best 3-year record of any team in a 3-year span of any team in the NFL.
That's true.
13-3, 12-4, 14-2.
Gary and Mead says, Mike, you're scaring me. I do not want Flacco long term. Not at all. That is scary. I want Locke long term. If the Broncos have to go 6-10 again to do that, then I am all for it. Why?
Joe Locke should be the starter. Let's cut Joe Flacco.
Why does it have to be the young quarterback in waiting? Need I remind everybody out there, need I remind everybody here at Sam's number 3, 15th and Curtis, that the times that the Broncos have won Super Bowls, it's been with over 35-year-old quarterbacks. It's actually been with over 37-year-old quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls. Okay? The young, hot prospect has never won a Super Bowl for the Broncos. In fact, there's been very little hot young quarterback success here in the entire history of the franchise.
20 months ago.
And yes, John Elway was once a young, hot quarterback, but he didn't win Super Bowls until he was old, grizzled.
He was 37 when he won his first Super Bowl. By the way, that same texture is 20 months ago, he'd have been like D-Mac and everybody else. Had we taken Josh Rosen as opposed to Bradley Chubb, he would have been doing cartwheels in his front yard. Right? He'd have put on a pair of panties and done cartwheels with a tutu on. That's what he'd been doing. There'd be cartwheels through the neighborhood. They'd had a neighborhood cartwheel party, right? That's what they'd have done. Where's Josh Rosen right now?
Who cares?
Getting his ass kicked in Miami in a competition with, wait for it, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was retired and put on 40 pounds because he's got 9 kids and 7 birthdays in the month of April.
He ate a lot of cake,
and it's true. Like, the guy is just, he's like, he's producing his own little football team. So, I mean, and Josh Rosen can't beat that guy out. Now, I know he's Harvard educated, but for a smart guy, he plays dumb. Like, that guy turns it over and he takes chance with the football he just shouldn't take. Josh Rosen can't beat that guy out, but that texture would have been doing backflips had we drafted him at 5 overall, because our quarterback issues are solved. Everybody in the draft will say, this is the most NFL-ready quarterback that they have. He's ready to roll. More so than Sam Darnold, more so than Baker Mayfield. He's the guy. Where would we be right now if Josh Rosen was on this roster? Thank you.
Everybody wants the quarterback of the future. And by that, everybody wants to have that quarterback that you could just pencil in as the guy for the next 10 to 15 years.
Showtime!
Do you know how rare that is? I mean, it looks like Mahomes might be that guy, but, you know, we still need to see more. But, you know, look, the Mannings, the Elways, the Bradys, the Roethlisbergers, those are few and far between, okay? Give me a guy that I know can be the guy for 5 years, and I'm like, let's roll. Let's run with it.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well for us with Peyton Manning.
Didn't it?
Right?
So which makes the point from Gary ridiculous to me. I don't want Flacco to be the guy. I want Locke to be the guy long term. Well, let's say Flacco goes out this year and plays at a level where it is just obvious to all of us, man, this guy's still got a lot left in the tank. If anything, he was underutilized in Baltimore.
Right.
He could have been used more. He could have carried more of a load and done just fine with it. Let's say we all agree with that when we come out of this season. You know what Joe Flacco's sitting at? Age 34, age 35. That's it. He's still got, with the way the quarterbacks are taking care of themselves, with the way the quarterbacks are protected these days, he's got at least another 4 or 5 years in him.
Yeah.
To play at a very high level. Why? What's wrong with that?
There's nothing.
You're telling me, as a football fan, as a Bronco fan, you're rooting against that just because you want to hitch your wagon to the idea that maybe, just maybe, Drew Locke can be the guy long term? I mean, this is the mistake that so many football teams fall into. Is they overreach, they overdraft a quarterback in the first round, then they are stuck with that guy for 5 years, desperately trying to get some sort of payoff. Even when it becomes painfully clear that that guy is not the answer, they stick with the guy, because they're vested, and they're hoping against hope that eventually this first round pick that they put so much into pays off. You know what happens when you do that? You get Marcus Mariota. You get Jameis Winston. You get guys that are just guys, and franchises end up spinning their wheels for years because they bank so much on this guy, and they just can't cut the cord.
And that, I mean, that, it's well said, Mike. It's exactly what ends up happening. I just want guys who can play. I just want football players. That's really all I want. I know Joe Flacco can play, and I don't know, you know, if he's going to be healthy or whatever the case may be, but I also know that, you know, coming from the system that Drew Locke came from, he's not ready to play in the NFL. As currently constructed, he is not ready to play. Like Marcus Mariota, right? Marcus Mariota was a second overall pick, man. He was, you know, out of this college spread system, and it's just going to take a while. We are still waiting for him to be, to legitimize his position as a quarterback in a traditional setting.
Stop waiting, because it's never going to happen.
And I saw the first preseason game. He takes off and runs and jumps into the end zone, gets hit. I mean, gets absolutely lambasted. Now, he's fine, right? It's early. But the cumulative damage of doing that to yourself at that position will wear on you. And, you know, now you know, we got a new coach in Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians can come in and fix Jameis Winston, you know. Well, we shall see. But the bottom line is this. It's younger isn't better. You know, whether it's coaching, whether it's playing, whatever the case may be, like, sometimes it works out, Mike. Sometimes you get, you know, a Baker Mayfield. Sometimes you get a Sean McVay. And then sometimes you get a Jameis Winston, a Josh Rosen, a, you know, you fill in the blank of the quarterback, right? Sometimes that's what you end up getting. And to me, you know, that just, you know, you get a young coach. Vance Joseph was a young coach, right? And it just doesn't, stick here. Like Vance Joseph, Hurricane Josh. And we played that game twice. How'd it work for us? We're 0 for 2 in that let's get a young coach game.
You're going to love this one. This one comes in from Jimmy.
Jimmy.
I know you don't trust anybody named Jimmy.
No, I really.
Unless his last name is Garoppolo.
Is it is this Jimmy Garoppolo?
Mark, you want to just pick out quarterbacks from the retirement home forever. Are you drinking skim milk because you think you are fat? Because you could be drinking whole milk.
What?
Well, apparently,
I didn't understand.
Here's how
that.
I interpret that.
Okay.
That, why do you want to keep reaching into the old guy bin?
Uh-huh.
That's skim. Go get the young guy. Go get the guy that's going to be the guy for 15 years. Go get the can't-miss young prospect. That's whole milk right there.
Which can't miss one are you going to get? You going to get Jameis Winston? That can't miss. Or are you going to get Marcus Mariota? That can't miss. Or are you going to get Josh Rosen? That can't miss. Or what? I mean, tell me the can't miss proposition you're going to get. Are you going to get Jake Locker? That can't
Showtime.
Miss.
Showtime.
You know which one are you going to get? Which one of those can't miss propositions are you going to get?
Maybe you will get Showtime.
Maybe it's Mark Sanchez.
Maybe you will get Showtime.
You get Mark Sanchez. That can't miss proposition.
But for every Showtime you get, how many other first round quarterbacks flame out?
Most. I'm just telling you. You gonna get Paxton Lynch? Big arm, athletic,
mobile. How did that mobility work for him last night?
He got decapitated.
Tall.
I mean, really?
Shiver me. He walked the plank last night.
No, I mean, listen, I hope he's okay. I mean, that was just a vicious, scary hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of hit that they're trying to outlaw in this league. But let me just give you a newsflash. If you try to build your quarterback position around one of those make something out of nothing type guys, or the hey, isn't he exciting? Look at the way he uses his legs type of guy.
Yeah.
Here's what's going to happen. You keep trying to build your offense around that guy. Excuse me. Cater your offense to that guy's skill set, which is always code for, listen, I know he can't throw and I know he can't dominate from the pocket, but hey, if we just cater an offense to his ability to run around, he could be a real good quarterback in this league for a long, long time.
He can't really dissect a defense, but boy, he can make plays off schedule.
Off schedule. Here's what happens when you base your offense around a quarterback who is quote unquote off schedule. Teams are going to recognize, hey, this guy runs a lot. And you know what? If it means taking a 15-yard penalty or somebody has to pay a fine in order to knock out the other team's starting quarterback with a headshot because he wants to run around a lot, guess what's going to happen? That's going to happen.
Okay, let me just really quick, Ben. I know we got to go, but Tom Brady, 42. Drew Brees, what, 41? Phillip Rivers, 37, 38. Ben Roethlisberger, 37, 38. Eli Manning, 39. I've seen a lot of really good old pocket quarterbacks. Show me where the good old running quarterback is. He's retired. Michael Vick, done.
And they never got close to 38, 39, 40.
No. It just doesn't work that way, people.
Steve Young was once a running quarterback. And then he became a lethal passer.
Right.
Won passing titles.
Right.
He became a guy that could dominate from the pocket.
And when he was a running quarterback, you know what he was? Not good. That's what he was.
All right. Good stuff. Good text. Keep them coming. RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043. You think about what could have been when it came to Mike Shanahan, John Elway, and the Broncos. Should Mike Shanahan be the coach right now? That's coming up next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.
Listen, there was a lot going on the field and the 49ers and Broncos, the practices, the fights. The Broncos not coming out on Friday and matching San Francisco's intensity, but bouncing back in an encouraging way on Saturday. But to me, as we grind through this preseason, I think the most interesting story to come out of the entire weekend is a reminder of how close we came to having Mike Shanahan back as the head coach of this football team. Where you had John Elway saying, I've wanted Mike to be a part of this, back with us for some time now.
Right.
Mike saying that, he and John have had conversations about coming back for the last couple of years. Shanahan admitting to Jeff Legwald, our buddy, that he was close, very close to coming back in 2018. It jives perfectly with the whole John Elway needing to sleep on it, the idea of bringing back Vance Joseph. I need to sleep on it for a second year and then bringing him back, when it sure seemed like he was ready to make a move, and it certainly looks now like that was the whole Shanahan thing in play that got nixed from up above. Presumably Joe Ellis.
Right.
So, to me, it's the most fascinating thing that came out of the weekend, because it was close and Shanahan wanted it and Elway wanted it. And my, how things would be different if they both got what they wanted.
Yeah, it would have been, it would have been a great reunion. You can come home again. We've seen that with John Gruden this preseason. By the way, I don't know if you watch any of Hard Knocks or if you watch any of their games, but they're a dramatically different and better football team from just a pure talent standpoint, Mike. And, there's so many criticisms last year when they got rid of Amari Cooper, when they got rid of Khalil Mack when they made all those changes. But you can see how much dramatically better they are, especially on the offensive side of the ball with some of the talent level at the wide receiver position. And, you know, Antonio, my feet are blistered and my helmet doesn't fit Brown. He hasn't even been participating in camp at all. He hasn't been there. So, they're significantly better, but you can come home again. It would have been great. There would have been the difference, Mike. And I
would it have worked?
I think it, I definitely think it would have worked. I think the big difference is that all that responsibility of being the GM would have been off of Mike's plate so he could just coach. And I think that would have been a good thing at this point in his career. Put the personnel stuff. Now you're still going to say, hey man, this is what kind of player I want. This is what fits, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you've said this many, many times, and I agree with you. Mike Shanahan, the general manager, late in his tenure here in Denver, let down Mike Shanahan, the coach. And I think it's hard to be kind of, you know, all-encompassing. You need to have a system of checks and balances. You need to be able to have healthy arguments and fight with people a little bit. But at the end of the day, you need to come to some type of agreement and move forward and you know, and make decisions. I've felt the way you felt, and I think Mike would have come back, and there's nothing wrong with Mike's knowledge of the game or his ability to coach. He has completely stayed current, and he was a big part of, you know, Kyle Shanahan, developing RG3, and I'm telling you what, he'd have been a great fit here. But I understand Joe Ellis didn't want to go, you know, he didn't want to go back in time. He didn't want to get into DeLorean and go back in time.
A little producing on the fly here. Millennial Ben, can you get Elway number 16 ready for me to go? I want to play that for you, for folks to respond to. And here's the thing, too, is that it would have looked very similar to what it is right now. You would have had Shanahan been the head coach.
Uh-huh.
Gary Kubiak would have been the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Gary Kubiak. So you'd still have the same offense. I think Joe Flacco would still be here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I think everything would be very similar to what it is right now. It's just you'd have a different head coach, offensive coordinator pairing than you have right now. And, hey, no disrespect to Vic Fangio, no disrespect to Rich Scangarello. These guys have no resumes. Not when it comes to being a head coach and not when it comes to being an offensive coordinator.
Correct.
You give me Shanahan's resume, you give me Kubiak's resume, I know you'd still hear, and I can't wait. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let me go check the text line. Kubiak's offense is outdated. Scangarello's is going to be much more modern. Okay, yeah. Fine. We get done with that. But who wouldn't take that over what we have right now? All that said, John Elway sees some similarities in Vic Fangio and Mike Shanahan.
Absolutely. And I think that comes from his experience and his background and where he's from. And I think that the discipline and the attention to detail is, you know, there. And I think that's the difference maker. Mike brought that, and, you know, Vic's the same way when it comes down to the defensive side and what he expects. And so, yeah, there's a lot of similarities with Mike and Vic. And, you know, the other thing is they're both, Mike was great on the offensive side and Vic's great on the defensive side. And so that's mainly what I was looking for in a new head coach. And fortunately, we found Vic.
All right. So it's still too early for guys like you who played under Mike Shanahan to really be able to say that there are similarities between Mike and Vic. I mean, there's just, Vic needs right to go out and prove it. But what made Shanahan such a great coach beyond the X's and O's?
Well, I mean, obviously the X's and O's are a big part of what gives you and lends credibility. When your head coach stands in front of you and says, hey guys, this is how they react as a defense, you know, to this formation, and here's how we're going to get them. And then you're in the game, and you execute it, and you line up in that formation, and they line up exactly like your coach says they line up, and then you gut them on a play. You're like, man, our coach is dialed in. Like, he knows, you know, he understands that. So that's a big part of it, Mike. I think the other thing that's big to me is, like, the authority that you have, the knowledge that you have, your ability to present the game so that guys understand it, and you being in charge, you just being authentic. I know that's a huge part of this game, and that's what we've seen.
So does your gut tell you that there are some similarities here between Fangio and Channing?
Absolutely. Fangio's done it forever. Fangio is a no-nonsense guy, and I think the big thing is Fangio has a ton of credibility because of where he's been and because he is authentic, Mike. He is you get what you see on the surface.
You wish Mike was here, though?
Yeah, because Mike's my buddy. You know? Sure.
Would you still be going over to his house to break down film? He'd be kind of busy now. I mean, he's busy now, but would he have time for you?
I'd probably be working for him.
Ooh. Well, great to have Vic Fangio here. Love Vic Fangio. And Joe Ellis, on behalf of me, thank you. Okay? Joe, thank you.
You are my hero.
Man, I love Joe Ellis.
Yes.
Man. Love myself.
He's your guy.
He's your guy. I love myself some Joe Ellis. Whew. That was close. All right. Coming up, what to look for tonight. That's next. And as we look ahead to tonight's game, against the backdrop of John Elway saying, hey, we have a ways to go.
Uh-huh.
What areas are you paying most attention to tonight?
Well, I want to look at our return teams, our kickoff return team. I guarantee you we're going to get another opportunity where the Niners are going to pooch kickoff. They're going to try to kick it down to the one and force us to return to see if they can create short or long fields for us. So that was a real issue in the game against Seattle. And anytime you show a fatal flaw, teams are going to continue to make you play to that fatal flaw. It's the old, I'm going to make you play left-handed, even though you're a right-handed guy. I'm going to play left-handed. So we're going to see that. I want to see if they can fix those issues that they have in the return game, their coverage teams. I want to see that as well. I want to see red zone execution. Like, for your starting offense to go down Joe Flacco and get into the red zone and not be able to score touchdowns, that's endemic of what's been going on here for what? The last 3 years? 4 years? I mean, that's a formula for losing.
So last week, though, you were okay with putting together a long drive, mistake-free, Flacco making some good decisions, and coming away with a field goal. That was okay for the first time out there.
Well, I'm not satisfied with it because...
But it's okay.
It was just okay. Yeah, okay you want to see?
But tonight, you need that same drive capped off with a touchdown.
And those things weren't Flacco issues. Those things were, there was three busts down there as far as I'm concerned. There was cutoffs on the backside that didn't get done, tight ends and wide receivers.
Yep.
They cost you run plays that put you behind the chains, and then there was a protection breakdown. There was a protection breakdown where Flacco got pressured and there was an incomplete pass because of a protection breakdown. Those are the things that happen, and those all happen in the red zone. So you put a nice drive together, you got down to the red zone, and you pooped in your helmet. And those aren't, hey, they got us on this one. They out-leveraged us, or they out-game-planned us, or whatever. There was no game plan. You just didn't execute. You didn't execute, and they beat you because of it. They physically wore you out on those plays. And one was a mental protection bust.
You know, you talk about improvement in the special teams. There's no reason why you shouldn't see improvement when you hear the quotes from special teams coordinator Tom McMahon, asked if he's narrowed down the returners yet. Quote, no, it's wide open. We haven't had any production. Somebody has to produce and separate themselves. Follow-up question, well, how about Kelvin McKnight? Nope, not yet. Nobody has. I'll be honest with you. It's wide open. Nobody's separated. Nobody's produced at an NFL level. Okay. So it's, you couldn't have more wide open competition. So we better start to see some improvement. Oh, but is it ultimately that important? I mean, look, most NFL games now, all I want from my punt returner is to catch the ball. Okay.
Right.
And in the case of the kickoffs, you know, just get it back out to the 20-yard line without a holding call or a clip, and I'm good. Let's go to work. I think those things are more important than, you know, this seemingly never-ending search or the importance that we place on, oh, we got to find a dynamic return guy. That'd be nice. Don't get me wrong. It'd be nice to have that kind of guy, but, you know, how crucial is it?
I think it's crucial in setting up field position. If you don't have a dynamic guy, when you every team is going to challenge you, like Seattle challenged us in week two of the preseason for us, or week one for them, they're going to pooch kick off and they're going to try to pin you. I mean, how many times? Where was the average starting position? You look at average starting position. If you're inside the 20 or right thereabouts, that the difference between the 25 and the 30 starting position and the 18 yard line. I mean, you're eliminating a third of your playbook. You're saying, hey, man, we can't run a third of these plays. We can't run a seven-step drop. We can't. Because you think about it. You take a sack from the, let's call it from the 30. You take a sack, and it's an 8-yard sack. Where are you? You're still on the 21-yard line. You start at the 18-yard line, and you take a sack. Now you're at the, you know, the 8-yard line, Mike, or the 9-yard line. And now, all of a sudden, if you end up punting from there, like, In like you're one first down away from 3 points. You know what I'm saying? If you have an average NFL punt and an average NFL return or even a fair catch, you're one first down away from being ready to try to kick a field goal. And like that's as opposed to you got to get two or three first downs to get that done. That's the importance to me of the field position game and special teams in general.
Okay, but Do you realize that, and figure this out over the course of 16 games, there were only two guys in the entire NFL last year that returned more than 30 punts.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah.
And one of the two, Tariq Cohen, he averaged 12 yards per punt return. That's the dream scenario.
Right, that's
because every time this guy returns a punt, he's giving you a first down.
Okay.
The second guy, the only other guy who had more than 30 punt returns was Ryan Switzer of Pittsburgh. He averaged 8 yards per return.
Yeah.
Okay, you're telling me would I turn down Tariq Cohen as my punt returner? No. But, I don't know, think about some of the guys that we think of as dynamic punt returners. You mentioned Julian Edelman earlier in this show. He had 20 punt returns, they averaged 8 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what he did most of the time? He caught the ball.
Right.
And Tom Brady tried it out.
And saved field position. And, you know, Tariq Cohen was on the Bears, a playoff team. Julian Edelman was on New England, a playoff team. Now, Switzer was on Pittsburgh, one of the most dysfunctional teams in football. And they've, you know, one of the things I heard the other day about the Pittsburgh Steelers, no drama in camp. Isn't that amazing? They beat Kansas City. Remember all the Kansas City fans when Kansas City scored, 30 points the first preseason game, how they won the Super Bowl? Remember that? They scored 7. I think Patrick Mahomes was 2 for 5 in the second preseason game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I actually watched that game. Where are all those Kansas City fans that were, after they scored 30 in the first week, were like, we won the Super Bowl! Nobody can stop us! Where are those guys now? I hope you all lose. Every one of you.
Speaking of that, we get Joe Tastator and Booger tonight.
I'll see if Booger can pop
on
tomorrow.
Booger will come on tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning before he leaves our fair city.
I'd like to talk to Booger.
Yeah. Lewis Riddick will be there as well. I'll get Booger Lewis on and tomorrow. I'll work on that. I'll work on that as we leave the radio show today. I'll make sure we get somebody involved in this broadcast.
By the way, real quick, looking at all the top kickoff returners from a year ago, they all basically range between 25 and 29 yards per kickoff return.
Okay.
So if you figure most kicks are going down
to the one,
they're getting the ball out to around
the 30. Yeah.
All right.
It's a big difference.
It'd be nice to get a guy that routinely gets out to the 30.
Yeah.
Give me a guy that give me a kickoff game that gets the ball out to the 24 without a penalty. I'll take that. Baby steps. Okay. Hey, coming up, we're going to hear from, we got the safety blitz with Nick Ferguson. John Davis and Cecil Lammy coming your way, and you're going to hear the outstanding interview that Sandy Clough and Orlando Franklin.